The following program is brought to you by Audio Journal, a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind, with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, its staff, or volunteer readers. Welcome all to Audio Journal's Poets' Corner, the program that offers its print-impaired audience and other listeners the opportunity to listen to poetry of people from all walks of life, of those from the distant past right up to the present day. This production is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm George Blomquist, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading the poems of George Barker, Jane Kenyon, Hayden Carruth, and James Wright, to name but a few of the fine writers found in the anthology Good Poems, published in 2002, edited by Garrison Keillor, and as read by him on his long-running public radio program, The Writer's Almanac. Today, we'll continue with Chapter 18, titled The End, beginning with the poem Street Ballad by George Barker, in which the narrator ponders the irony of the sometime merciless relationship between man and his fellow creatures. Here, then, is Street Ballad by George Barker. From high above, the birds look down and sing because they see the monstrous comedies they miss, living several stories higher, the dirty degradations and the gross humiliations. They, like the gods without pity, look down upon from a telephone wire. But as they sit there higher above, and gaze down upon our brutal, short, and messy circumstances, they do not see the one who stands behind a cardboard tree, examining them coldly, with one eye closed, and the other staring along the barrel of a gun. George Barker was born in Essex, England, in 1913. He was a friend of Dylan Thomas, a protege of T.S. Eliot, and renowned for his romantic life. He fathered 15 children in several different countries, including 3 in one summer. He died in October of 1991. In our next poem, the metaphorical relationship between evening and death is explored in Let Evening Come by Jane Kenyon. Let the light of the late afternoon shine through chinks in the barn, moving up the bales as the sun moves down. Let the crickets take up chafing as a woman takes up her needles and her yarn. Let evening come. Let dew collect on the hoe, abandoned in long grass. Let the stars appear and the moon disclose her silver horn. Let the fox go back to its sandy den. Let the wind die down. Let the shed go black inside. Let evening come. To the bottle in the ditch, to the scoop in the oats, to the air in the lung, let evening come. Let it come as it will, and don't be afraid. God does not leave us comfortless, so let evening come. Jane Kenyon was born in 1947 and grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where she studied at the University of Michigan. In 1972, she married her teacher, Donald Hall, and moved with him to East Pond, New Hampshire, where she spent the rest of her life. Sadly, she died of cancer in 1995. We now turn the page to Chapter 19, the final chapter in our Good Poems anthology, titled The Resurrection. We'll open with the poem titled 45 by Hayden Carruth. When I was 45, I lay for hours beside a pool, the green, hazy springtime water, and watched the salamanders coupling, how they drifted lazily, their little hands floating before them, aimlessly in and out of the shadows, 15 or 20 of them. And suddenly, two would dart together and clasp one another belly to belly, the way we do, tender and vigorous, and then would go and drift away at peace, lazily, in the green pool that was their world, and for a while was mine. The sheer joy of communing with nature's creatures is expressed in our next verse, A Blessing, by James Wright. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture, where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom. James A. Wright was born in 1927. He was the son of a factory worker and grew up in bleak and blackened circumstances in Martins Ferry, Ohio, determined to leave and never return. He served in the United States Army, then went to Kenyon College on the GI Bill, started writing seriously, was elected to Phi Beta Kappa, won a Fulbright grant, and went off to Vienna, then took a doctorate at the University of Washington under Theodore Retke. His The Branch Shall Not Break was considered a major breakthrough in his career in 1963. Wright died of throat cancer in 1980. An ode of sorts to the impoverished and exploited orphan children of early 19th century England. It's titled Holy Thursday by William Blake. 'Twas on a holy Thursday, their innocent faces clean, the children walking two and two in red and blue and green. Gray-headed beadles walked before with wands as white as snow, till into the high dome of Paul's they, like the Thames waters, flow. Oh, what a multitude they seemed, these flowers of London town! Seated in companies they sit, with radiance all their own. The hum of multitudes was there, but multitudes of lambs, thousands of little boys and girls raising their innocent hands. Now like a mighty wind they raise to heaven the voice of song, or like harmonious thunderings the seats of heaven among. Beneath them sit the aged men, wise guardians of the poor. They cherish pity, lest you drive an angel from your door. William Blake was born in England in 1757. He was an engraver and mystic and artist who illustrated his own poems. Songs of Innocence, published in 1789, and Songs of Experience, published in 1794, were two of his more famous works. Blake died in 1827. Up next, an excerpt from Walden by Henry David Thoreau. The life in us is like the water in the river. It may rise this year, higher than man has ever known it, and flood the parched uplands. Even this may be the eventual year which will drown out all our muskrats. It was not always dry land where we dwell. I see far inland the banks which the stream anciently washed before science began to record its freshets. Everyone has heard the story which has gone the rounds of New England of a strong and beautiful bug which came out of the day leaf of an old table of apple wood, which had stood in a farmer's kitchen for 60 years, first in Connecticut and afterward in Massachusetts. It was from an old egg deposited in the living tree many years earlier still, as appeared by counting the annual layers beyond it, which was heard gnawing out of several weeks, hatched, perchance, by the heat of an urn. Who does not feel his faith in a resurrection and immortality strengthened by hearing of this? Who knows what beautiful and winged life, whose egg has been buried for ages under many concentric layers of woodness, in the dead dry life of society, deposited it first in the alburnum of the green and living tree, which has been gradually converted into the semblance of its well-seasoned tomb, heard perchance gnawing out now for years by the astonished family of man as they sat round the festive board, may unexpectedly come forth from amidst society's most trivial and hand-sell furniture to enjoy its perfect summer life at last. I do not say that John or Jonathan will realize all of this, but such is the character of that morrow which mere lapse of time can never make to dawn. The light which puts out our eyes is darkness to us. Only that day dawns to which we are awake. There is more day to dawn. The sun is but a morning star. Born in 1817, Henry David Thoreau was a pencil maker and surveyor, a shy naturalist and woodsman, a canoeist for whom the town of Concord was more than big enough. He saw New York once and observed, "It must have a very bad influence on children to see so many human beings at once, mere herds of men." He conquered his timidity on the page, however, and blew his trumpet loud in Walden, or Life in the Woods. It was cobbled together from his journals, which came out in 14 volumes in 1906. Thoreau once said, "A true account of the actual is the rarest poetry, for common sense always takes a hasty and superficial view." Henry David Thoreau died in 1862. The soothing effects of nature upon a troubled mind is the subject of our next poem, The Peace of Wild Things, by Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water. And I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Born in 1934, poet, novelist, and environmentalist Wendell Berry lives in Port Royal, Kentucky, near his birthplace, where he has maintained a farm for over 40 years. Mistrustful of technology, he holds deep reverence for the land and is a staunch defender of agrarian values. He is the author of over 50 books of poetry, fiction, and essays. His poetry celebrates the holiness of life and everyday miracles often taken for granted. In 2016, Berry was awarded the Ivan Sandroff Lifetime Achievement Award by the National Books Critics Circle. In 2010, President Barack Obama awarded him with the National Humanities Medal. In our next verse, the poet expresses the awesome gift of nature's bounty in From Blossoms by Lee Young Lee. From blossoms comes this brown paper bag of peaches we bought from the boy at the bend in the road where we turned toward signs painted peaches. From laden boughs, from hands, from sweet fellowship in the bins comes nectar at the roadside. Succulent peaches we devour, dusty skin and all, comes the familiar dust of summer, dust we eat. Oh, to take what we love inside, to carry within us an orchard to eat, not only the skin, but the shade, not only the sugar, but the days, to hold the fruit in our hands, adore it, then bite into the round jubilance of peach. There are days we live as if death were nowhere in the background, from joy to joy to joy, from wing to wing, from blossom to blossom to impossible blossom to sweet impossible blossom. Lee Young Lee was born in Jakarta, Indonesia in 1957. He was born of Chinese parents who brought him to this country as a small child. He's the author of The City in Which I Love You, Book of My Nights, and The Winged Seed, A Remembrance. The savoring of nature's gifts is likewise extolled in The First Green of Spring by David Budbill. Out walking in the swamp, picking cowslip, marsh marigold, this sweet first green of spring. Now sautéed in a pan, melting to a deeper green than ever they were alive, this green, this life, harbinger of things to come. Now we sit at the table, munching on this message from the dawn, which says we and the world are alive again today, and this is the world's birthday. And even though we know we are growing old, we are dying, we will never be young again, we also know we're still right here now, today. And my, oh my, don't these greens taste good? David Wolfe Budbill was born on June 13, 1940, in Cleveland, Ohio. In 1967, he graduated from college with a degree in theology and from the Union Theological Seminary in New York City, where he was influenced by the writings of Thomas Merton. He was also the author of 8 books of poems, 8 plays, 2 novels, a collection of short stories, a children's picture book, and dozens of essays. He died in September of 2016. Recognizing and appreciating the present moment is explored in our next poem, Here, by Grace Paley. Here I am in the garden, laughing, an old woman with heavy breasts and a nicely mapped face. How did this happen? Well, that's who I wanted to be, at last. A woman in the old style, sitting, stout thighs apart under a big skirt. Grandchildren sliding on and off my lap, a pleasant summer perspiration. That's my old man across the yard. He's talking to the meter reader. He's telling him the world's sad story, how electricity is oil or uranium, and so forth. I tell my grandson, run over to your grandpa and ask him to sit beside me for a minute. I am suddenly exhausted by my desire to kiss his sweet, explaining lips. Grace Paley was born in New York City in 1922. She was a bard of Jewish New York and the author of phenomenal books like The Little Disturbances of Man and Enormous Changes at the Last Minute. She taught many years at Sarah Lawrence College. Paley died in 2007. Thank you. Life in this world is replete with points and counterpoints, peaks and valleys, as expressed in our next verse, The Lives of the Heart, by Jane Hirschfield. The lives of the heart are ligneous, muscular, chemical, bare wirch-colored feathers, green tunnels of horsetail reed, where calcified spirals, Fibonacci spheres, are edible, are glassy, are clay, blue schist, can be burned as tallow, as coal, can be skinned for garnets, for shoes, cast shadows or light, shuffle, snort, cry out in passion, are salt, are bitter, tear sweet grass with their teeth, step silently into blue needle fall at dawn, thrash in the net until hit, rise up as cities, as serpentine magma, as maples, hiss lava red into the sea, leave the strange kiss of their bodies in Burgess shale, can be found, can be lost, can be carried, broken, sung, lie dormant until they are opened by ice, by drought, go blind in the service of lace, are starving, are sated, indifferent, curious, mad, are stamped out in plastic, in tin, are stubborn, are careful, are slipshod, are strung on the blue backs of flies, on the black backs of cows, wander the vacant whale roads, the white thickets heavy with slaughter, wander the fragrant carpets of alpine flowers. Not one is not held in the arms of the rest to blossom. Not one is not given to ecstasy's lions. Not one does not grieve. Each of them opens and closes, closes and opens the heavy gate, violent, serene, consenting, suffering it all. Jane Hirschfield grew up in Manhattan, went to Princeton, class of 73, worked on a farm for a year, studied Zen Buddhism full-time for 8 years, and became a freelance editor. She is the author of many books of poems, including Three Foxes by the Edge of the Field at Twilight, The Love of Aged Horses, The Lives of the Heart, and a book of essays, Nine Gates, Entering the Mind of Poetry. She lives in Mill Valley, California. She once said, Lyric poetry records our fidelity to the life of this earth, even as we know that it will inevitably be lost. In our next poem, which has a decidedly Christian bent, the lush beauty of the spring season is juxtaposed with a call for Christ's protection of innocence, echoing Eden's lost purity. It's called Spring, by Gerard Manley Hopkins. Nothing is so beautiful as spring, when weeds in wheels shoot long and lovely and lush. Rushes' eggs look little low heavens, and thrush, through the echoing timber, does so rinse and ring the ear, it strikes like lightnings to hear him sing. The glassy pear tree leaves and blooms, they brush the descending blue, that blue is all in a rush with richness, the racing lambs too have fair their fling. What is all this juice and all this joy? A strain of the earth's sweet being in the beginning in Eden Garden. Have, get, before it cloy, before it cloud, Christ, Lord, and sorrow with sinning, innocent mind in Mayday in girl and boy, most, O maid's child, thy choice and worthy the winning. Born in 1844, Gerard Manley Hopkins was born to a wealthy and artistic Stratford family, and then he went off to Balliol College at Oxford, where he converted to Catholicism and decided to become a priest. He began writing poems again and continued through his years as parish priest in the slums of Manchester, Liverpool, and Glasgow, and during his time in Dublin teaching Greek at the Royal University College, until his death of typhoid fever in 1884 at the age of 45. His poems were not published until his friend Robert Bridges edited a volume of them in 1918. We now conclude today's program with the final poem in the Good Poems Anthology. It's titled Fishing in the Keep of Silence by Linda Gregg. There is hush now while the hills rise up and God is going to sleep. He trusts the ship of heaven to take over and proceed beautifully as he lies dreaming in the lap of the world. He knows the owls will guard the sweetness of the soul in their massive keep of silence, looking out with eyes open or closed over the length of the Tomales Bay that the herons conform to, whitely broad in flight, white and slim in standing. God, who thinks about poetry all the time, breathes happily as he repeats to himself, "There are fish in the net. Lots of fish this time in the nets of the heart." Born in 1942, Linda Gregg grew up in Marin County, California, and later lived in Northampton, Massachusetts. Her books include Chosen by the Lion, Alma, and Too Bright to See. She died in 2019. You've been listening to Poets' Corner, a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you have any comments or suggestions for Poets' Corner, please let us know by calling us at 508-797-1117 or by emailing us at info@audiojournal.org or by mailing us directly at Audio Journal, 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm George Blomquist, thanking you for listening. And now, stay tuned for other local programming brought to you by Audio Journal.
Interested in taking the bus but aren't sure how? Let the Worcester Regional Transit Authority make it easier for you. The WRTA Travel Training Program is designed to help people who would like to use the regular WRTA fixed route bus service but aren't sure where to begin. You can receive instruction on a one-on-one basis, or you may bring a friend or relative and do it together. You decide. You will learn how to read a schedule, understand transit terminology, pay your fare, where to purchase tickets, what to do in case of an emergency, and all things having to do with learning to use public transit. If there is a particular route or routes that you would like to use, the travel trainer will tailor the training to meet your needs. Travel training is free of charge, and while you are with the travel trainer, your trips are free as well. Please call 508-453-3460 to set up an appointment today.